Harper Perennial and Harper Audio present The Second Brain, a groundbreaking new understanding of nervous disorders of the stomach and intestine, by Michael D. Gershon, M.D. Read by Peter Burkrot. Preface. Humans are a self-centered bunch. Evolution, or if one is a fundamentalist, creation, is viewed as a story with a happy ending. The process is seen as having culminated in the production of the ultimate species, the only one that reflects the image of God. Because we see ourselves as special, whatever detracts from the centrality of the human condition is inevitably viewed with suspicion, if not outright hostility. Copernicus and Galileo did not receive the plaudits of their contemporaries when they suggested that the sun, the stars, and the planets might not revolve around the Earth. That was because humans live on Earth. It seemed totally unreasonable to believe that God would place the ultimate species on a backwater planet in a third-rate galaxy. To deny the centrality of the human position is tantamount to denying God, a venture never to be embarked upon without risk. Science often interferes with the human self-image. Its observations are made without regard to their potential impact on human feelings. Nature is nature. Scientists do not make or invent principles. They discover them. The profession is thus a dull one. Science is not creative, as, for example, is art. An artist produces an opus. A scientist merely observes the facts and communicates them. Bliss to a scientist is to be right, while bliss for an artist is to be beautiful, whimsical, and imaginative. The plodding nature of their profession often leads scientists to grief. They follow their trails of discovery wherever those trails lead, which sometimes is to trouble. Consider the lowly gut and its nervous system. The bowel just is not the kind of organ that makes the pulse race. No poet would ever write an ode to the intestine. To be frank, the popular consensus is that the colon is a repulsive piece of anatomy. Its shape is nauseating, its content disgusting, and it smells bad. The bowel is a primitive, slimy, snake-like thing. Its body lies coiled within the belly, and it slithers when it moves. In brief, the gut is despicable and reptilian, not at all like the brain, from which wise thoughts emerge. Clearly, the gut is an organ only a scientist would love. I am such a scientist. Actually, I am a neurobiologist. Most of my colleagues study the brain. The few who do not investigate the spinal cord, or models, the nervous systems of more primitive beasts, which they hope will help them to understand how the brain works. Those of us whose trails of discovery have led to the gut are beyond rare. We are just a little on the common side of unique. I have become accustomed, at meetings for the Society of Neuroscience, to being a house novelty. Until a recent revolution led to the establishment of the new field of neurogastroenterology, the nervous system of the gut was not to be taken seriously. I suffered. Still, there I am, a neurobiologist who has devoted the whole of his career to the part of the nervous system that runs the bowel. My route to the gut was a tortuous one. It began years ago, in 1958, when I was a student at Cornell. I was taking a course on the neurobiology of behavior and became interested in what was then a newly discovered chemical of the body, serotonin. Serotonin had generated a great deal of excitement at that time because its ability to contract a rat's uterus had just been found to be blocked by LSD. Now, before you laugh and dismiss that observation as the kind of thing that would only agitate a professor of something or other, remember that this was the age of Timothy Leary. The mind-altering effects of LSD and the hallucinations it causes were big news. Serotonin was known to be present in the brain. If LSD could block the action of serotonin on a rat's uterus, people reasoned, it seemed logical to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?